Hi, Pod. We're back.
Yes, oh my gosh, welcome back to another episode of History Time, Story Time with a Historical President. I'm Blake
And
Anderson.
I'm Catherine Escalante, and we're joining you live from two different
Two
states,
different states, two different regions, two different time zones.
two different everything,
This is
places in
crazy.
life. I feel like we're.
This is the other fun thing about this is that Catherine and I genuinely have not caught up.
No, we haven't. We've been so busy and it's just been a hectic, like, little thing. But, you know, here we are. It's been like sporadic text messages of like, hey, I miss you.
Hey, I
Are you
miss
doing
you.
good?
You doing good? I hear you're busy. I'm also
Yeah.
busy.
I hear you're in quarantine. Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well,
Yeah, guys, I'm currently in quarantine, kind of. Kind of just got out of it, technically. Because I just tested negative for COVID.
oh, I
Yeah.
get tested for COVID tomorrow, part of my regularly scheduled program of
College
COVID
life.
testing, college tings and the age of coronavirus.
How is college?
How is college is such a great question. I'm at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. Whoa. Okay, that was kind of cool though.
That was a Snapchat coming in. Sorry, guys.
So yes. It's going great. I survived my first week. But I will
So
say,
proud.
when teachers in high school are like, it's so much reading in college, they're not kidding. One of my classes in particular, like the daily reading assignments so far, we had one day, it was 110 pages of a textbook
Daily.
in one night.
What was it? Like what
It
class?
was actually my history class. I'm taking a class called Modern Germany. That's really dope.
Ah, exciting.
It's really awesome. So that was the first day. It was 106 pages. And then the next day that I'm currently in the progress of doing, so I actually had the weekend to do it. So far, it has been 62 pages on this one. So
Okay,
hundreds of, yeah,
starting off nice.
one of my classes. So it's all good. Yeah. Catherine, how was your senior year?
I'm so busy. It's been what, 2 weeks? I'm already in quarantine and my schedule has not stopped at all. I'm currently in the process of setting up voter registration booths, working with two national organizations, and I am dying inside.
Okay, pop off.
Wow, it's been such a stressful week. Since I've been in quarantine, I've been trying to keep up with like my six AP classes, this voter registration thing, adding stuff to this website that I created for AP history. It's been literally a doozy.
Yeah, so if the
Like,
episodes are more sporadic, that's because we're both dying.
yeah.
And it'll be fine.
I just remember seeing you last year like get pulled in like a million different directions and being like, Blake is so like awesome for like delegating like this. And now I just know what you were feeling every day. Just like the
Yeah.
constant pressure. And I'm like working on debate as well, like slowly but surely I'm reading stuff on like nuclear arms and stuff, and I'm like, wow, I hate it here, but at the same time, wow, I love it here. It's a process. We're doing well. I turn 18 in a week.
Oh,
What
she's gonna
if
register to vote. She's gonna register to vote.
what yeah, doing so well.
Wait, I mailed my ballot here just to get that out there in case anyone who needs to listen to me say that I did that, because like just to be proud of me, like that's a like be
I'm
proud of
so
me. And
proud. I'm so proud.
if the USPS is still exists by the time I get my mail and ballot, I'm gonna be there. If I can figure out how to vote,
We
that'd be
don't
also great.
accept disenfranchised voters in this household.
Yeah. So I mean we do, because the right to vote is a right.
Yes.
So
Yes.
yeah. Other than that, there's one th other thing I wanted to discuss, and it's the fact that I like played tourist today.
Yay, yeah. He sent me these beautiful pictures of Boston, and I was like, in what way do I cry?
In what language do I cry in?
Yeah.
But yeah, today I saw what I thought was the old state house, and it actually just turned out to be like an old building. Old state house is the old state house is the building in the back of the infamous Boston Massacre portrait,
Interesting.
by Paul Revere. And I was like, oh my goodness, this building is like infamous. It's the old state house. Like, I'm like standing in history. And then it was not actually the old state house. The old state house was around the corner. So I got a photo with some random building.
That's all right. That's part of the story.
It's now a gift. Like, the random building was now a gift shop, like entirely a gift shop. But we missed going into the old state house by 10 minutes. It closed 10 minutes before we got there. So I was like, that's kind of sucky.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, which I was like kind of sad about. But I also saw some people throw some tea in the harbor. I saw that where the Boston Tea Party happened. So yeah.
That's iconic.
I saw Paul Revere's grave.
Oh, wow. That also was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Went to Boston Common. I think I saw someone get mugged, but we're not going to talk about that.
That's just a little too much for that episode.
A little TMI there, but it's fun. We're having fun. I went with some friends. It's having a great time. Socially distanced, of course. That's another thing, too. Catherine and I are now living in two very different mindsets with this pandemic.
Oh, for sure. What mindset are you in? I don't even know what mindset I'm in.
I am in the mindset where, a place, I haven't actually seen anyone without a mask.
I wish.
I don't think since I've been here I've seen someone without a mask. Wait, if they weren't eating.
Is it criminalized? I hate using that
it's
word.
It's enforced. It's mandated, yeah. But, okay, like,
great.
It's mandated, but,
so, like with guides and stuff?
Even when I was in the city today, everyone, even the people who were, like, reenacting, like, 17th century like Boston Tea Party stuff on a boat as a tourist attraction, even they were wearing masks.
Oh my gosh, like
they said we're gonna put safety over historical accuracy in this sense.
Word. So I cannot relate. Honestly, I'm disappointed in my state. I'm disappointed in everything. I mean, school-wise, I'll be honest, like 95% of people wear masks. I've seen a couple drifters, and the rationale is abysmal. I laugh. I literally have yelled multiple times, and I don't care. I don't care. Like, I will yell at you. Mm-hmm. I will embarrass you. I'm sorry if that's, like, a little harsh, but, like, I will. But, yeah, I walked into the gas station before my little quarantine because I really wanted a Red Bull, and nobody in that gas station had a mask, not even, like, mm-hmm. the employee. There's like 9 people in there, and I just said out loud, where are your masks? And they all just mm-hmm. kind of looked at me, and I was like, answer! Answer!
I also like how the Karen, like, that's not a Karen approach. The Karen approach to this is not wearing, is the absence of a mask.
Right. Power. And, like, our state's cases are through the roof per capita. Our hospitalizations, we've had more than 10 hospitalizations in 3 days. How ridiculous is that? All of our universities, like, quarantine rooms, full.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is like, I'm going to choose my terminology here my political terminology here very carefully, because, like, I'm not trying to do a direct attack on any one individual, but most definitely. It's just like it's the italicizing without masks in an official release for me. Not being in a state for me.
You know what? You usually call people out. It's my turn. Yeah, our governor is currently not doing anything. She's campaigning for the president of the United States outside of our state while everybody is literally dying. Twitter has decided to be galvanized in such a stupid way. Oh my gosh, I saw a tweet the other day that was like, well, number of cases don't matter, hospitalizations do. And I'm like, wow, it's really hard for some of you guys to understand. Like, y'all are really that dense. Like, it takes a couple of weeks, a couple of weeks to see, like, increments of, like, cases translate to hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. But either way, you're going to see them. Like,
my other favorite thing, difficult. As I've heard reports from my friends at a university in South Dakota, the, like, place where you would get tested in the rinky-dink little college town, like, just has been closed.
Really?
Like, it just has, like, been inconvenient, like, closed, or, like, otherwise, like, inconvenient to go and get tested. So,
Well, you know, you still have, like, huge freaking parties going on. I'm sorry, oh, I'm just exposing everyone.
I know, I do know my one friend. I have actually, okay, this is a story. I'm also exposing someone. I do have a friend who went and was like, oh, I'm going to go, like, hang out with this person, which is, like, risky, whatever. Maybe wear a mask, maybe go outside. But, like, when she, he went to go hang out with this person, this person was like, oh, we're going to go chill with these people, which was, like, uneasy, questionable for this person. And then toward the end, it turned out they ended up at a literal COVID party. Everyone there had COVID, or they were there to get COVID. So I know someone who accidentally, in like air quotes, got COVID. Catherine, I'll tell you who it is after this call.
Please do. Wait, I have a theory. I have a theory because I just Snapchatted someone and they were like, oh, I'm heading to a party. And I'm like, gross. And then... Yeah. Didn't Snapchat back. Interesting.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Anywho.
Oh, this episode.
It's a tangent from, like, what we've actually been talking about. Usually we're like, this is topical, which it is. But, like...
I mean, it's topical, but not in the pandemic sense. Mm-hmm. Well, kind of. Yeah, it is topical. Oh, yeah. I have a tie-in. So, today, we're going to be talking about rich people.
Mm-hmm.
Blake texted me, and he's like, yo, we should do an Eat the Rich episode. I'm like, you don't even have to say anything
else. Say less, okay.
It's yes. and I was like, well, for sure. And then, when we were kind of bouncing ideas, I bounced a couple ideas, and I landed on... Russian history. I remember at the start of this podcast, I was like, I've never got into Russian history.
And then I started getting into it.
Yeah, I started getting into it consequently because I'm like, well, Blake loves it. Mm-hmm. I'm Blake, essentially. So now I love Russian history. So I'm going to be talking about the Romanov family and their excessive wealth.
Okay. And and I'm just like sharing. Because like most episodes were like, we're not going to tell you, but like, so I'm going to talk about the financial crisis and panic of 1893, and a good thing that actually came out of it, because I have a modern tie-in that I'm going to discuss, and I'm going to be like, for all you like people who are like Reaganomics, laissez-faire, trickle down.
Whoa, that was a lot.
I'm going to be like. Like, here's the other thing. I'm not a finance person. So if I, like...
I love economics.
Yeah. So that's where Catherine and I are different. But, like, when researching this particular instance and what happened here, like, I just have to be, like, oh, well, you see, I don't understand why this can't translate to today and why we've changed. So...
Dude, I'm sorry. I can't get over how you just said... Like, all those things.
Reaganomics.
A+.
Yeah.
Reaganomics. I remember, okay, there's this one app called Both Sides, and you basically just have a lot of discourse with different people on, like, policy, mm-hmm. but everybody on there reads, like, political and economic theory, so it's actually quite productive. The problem with that is everybody reads theory, so they think that they are intellectually superior no matter what. So, like, you have, like, the Austrian economics, who are just, like, crazy. And are, like, anti-capitalist,
yeah.
Which is, like, if you don't know what that is, like, they're just, like, I don't care if children work, like, B12, this is survival of the fittest. And then you have, like, anti-communists and stuff that are, like, I hate the government, abolish currency.
Mm-hmm. I don't, to quote Timothée Chalamet's character in the movie Lady Bird, I don't like money. Great film.
No word.
Catherine took a sip of water with that, and she said, ooh, okay. So, yeah, I think that's all we have to go through. One quote of the day. I'm going to be really basic here. I'm just really inspired by the revolutionary history I saw today. And this is also because Catherine just genuinely forgot, and this was our intro where we, like, caught up and stuff. So to not spoil this, I'm just going to bring it back with a classic. Give me liberty or give me death. And that tie-in, yes. That tie-in with an Eat the Rich. Oh, that's a Patrick in a quote. But that tie-in with a episode about eating the rich is like, those are your options also. You have liberty or you have death.
Yes.
So let's consider. And with that, we ask you to maybe grab your snacks. Maybe relax if you can in this pressing time and enjoy this episode of His Story Time.
All right, Blake, tell me your story.
Okay, welcome back. Hopefully you have your snacks. So today we're going to be having a little fun and talking about some economic history of the United States. And I'm just going to preface with I'm not an economics person. There was once a point in the not so distant past where I was like, why don't we just print more money? I say that as a joke. I know, don't come for me on Twitter, but if you do, it's at Bland or Anderson, the more Bland Anderson, or at history underscore time pod. Shameless plug later.
I just want to say really quickly, you know how I've always complained that my Twitter username was so boring?
Yeah.
I figured out a way you can change it, so now it's okay Catherine with two Ks. So just saying.
I'm really proud of her. What about the old podcast though? Were you
They're just gonna have they're to gonna figure it out.
They're gonna figure it out. you're gonna have to say in your bio, like formerly actually. Oh shoot, what is it? It's a 3463.
Yeah, it was like Catherine underscore 461. It was so like yeah. Basic.
I wanted to say three, I don't know why. Anyways, back to the history. Today I'm talking about the time where philanthropy took on a whole new meaning. So we're going to like post-Reconstruction United States. the Gilded Age, as some refer to it, and by some I mean Mark Twain, I believe, correct?
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, actually.
Yeah. I should be. It's the gilded apple metaphor, if you're not familiar with it. And when I say that, I mean it looks nice on the outside, but when you bite into it and you see a little further, it's a question mark. It's really a question mark. So today I'm talking about a little bit of populism, a little bit of the gold standard, and a whole lot of crap. So the industrialization that happened following the Civil War was kind of catalyzed by the Civil War, especially like railways, trunk lines, things like that. In order to build the infrastructure of the United States, that was a very large and powerful labor force. And so when we had that happen, that was a lot of jobs. That created a lot of jobs, and that created a lot of like economic stimulation through that. So cut to post, like let's now all the railways, what happens now? Mass unemployment for those workers. This is also coming at the time of populism. William Jennings Bryan is really on the up and up with his people. He just never quite gets there. I've also seen the comparison that people are like, William Jennings Bryan is just like Bernie Sanders. And I think that's a fun argument.
You said that
actually. Yeah.
I said that.
I think that's actually a really interesting argument.
Yeah. Cause like, if you think about it, I mean, there are the people that never were, but are. In politics.
Yeah.
And they're both kind of like, I mean, this might be controversial.
They're both like low-key. They're both independent. They didn't belong to the two-party system.
I mean, yeah, but they still conform to a party, so kind of, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, Bernie's independent.
Yeah, Bernie was independent, but
he ran as a Democrat.
He had to run as a Democrat. And then also there's a little populism involved because, like, the Democratic platform and, like, some of the associated Democratic Socialist platform has some. A little bit of populism in it as well.
Wow, we're just really boring this episode so far.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No. Like the both of us. I'm like talking about, okay, guys, let's talk about like trains. I went on a train for the first time today, actually, like a real train. Metro Transit. I literally was like, why is it under the ground? And my friends laughed at me. Yeah, I rode the T.
You're just a South Dakota boy.
I'm literally a South Dakota boy. No, and they're like, there's like this funky escalator. And I was like, have you been on an escalator before? And I'm like, okay, but like we have one and it's in Shields. So I literally, yeah. It's in like a Shields in our hometown. So I was like, I really don't. And it was like a fast moving escalator. I was like, I'm literally
they
afraid.
Scare me.
I'm afraid they for my scare life. Me. And my friends like were walking up it. And I was like, oh, hell no.
No, escalators scare me.
Yeah.
That's been like my thing.
Mm-hmm. So, back to the history. We have this crisis, and it begins 18 months earlier, but we're going to be talking primarily about 1895. So president,
president year.
Yeah. You have your like markers in history, and one of mine is the Newsies setting of 1899. Yeah. So use that if you know what I'm talking about to set the time. This is like primarily before labor unions, before Upton Sinclair's sensationalist novel The Jungle and things like that. Yeah, pulling out all the outside sources. Just set yourself here. Workers' rights aren't a thing. So, but we do have...
This is ANCAP. Mm-hmm. This is ANCAP.
But here's the thing. We do have tycoons. We have robber barons. And we have, like, philanthropy and all that stuff. So that's also, that's ultimately what we're talking about today. Rockefeller. Well, we're not talking about him today.
Carnegie?
Nope.
JP.
Ah! Yeah!
Okay, oh, she got it. You ruined the surprise. Okay. Well, JP is like in cahoots with President Grover Cleveland. So here, we're going to talk about it. Back to William Jennings Bryan. People are pushing for this bimetal standard because they're like, the gold standard's not cutting it. The fear is that that will then lead to inflation and it won't help the crisis that also happens. However, again, 18 months earlier, panic of 1893, millions are unemployed and the National Treasury's reserves are dropping. So this is what I have here. It says normally the Treasury held gold reserves above the statutory floor of 100,000 million, but by January 24th, 1895, the Treasury has only $68 million.
Darn.
So scarcely a week later, it was down $45 million. Keep in mind, this is also 1895, so that's a I'm not going to swear. That's a lot of money. So now,
what has college done to you?
Yeah, exactly. Literally so much reading. I started using, like, I feel like what's happened lately is I keep having, like, words that I just, like, can't place. Did you just get a bloody nose?
No, I have a really runny nose. So it's, like, not good. Sorry,
Catherine,
I'm really sick.
Catherine is dying over there. It's
not
hard.
A COVID.
It's
so
totally
good.
Yeah. I also have a newspaper headline here. From North Platte, Nebraska. And it just has the word panic exclamation point at the top. So things, things are not doing well. So the only thing we can turn to at this point, there's a single investor holding a draft of $10 million. But the president has just been informed that there is 9 million left in gold reserves.
Jesus.
So we're like, oh, okay, this is
That's not good.
This isn't good. As Catherine guessed, our homeboy JP Morgan, the story goes he had rosacea and like wasn't known for his public appearances. So
oh,
he like
right.
stayed in the background. This is like just a fun fact. It's fine and it's whatever. But he avoids public attention and like, but he has like a reputation about him because he's still a very rich, powerful, wealthy person who capitalized on the industrialization that happened in the post Reconstruction years. So,
right.
Then kind of like takes over America's financial, financial plight. He's aware of the government and he sees danger and opportunity in this rocky situation. He was a railroad tycoon, as we all aspire to be, really. And like for his business, he realized he needed a stable and growing economy, and that ultimately, like if he did that, he would then continue to like produce to continue to have money. You need an economy to make money.
Crazy.
And a crazy subject, even I understand. So he was literally the thing that this one source I found said, an imploding government is not good for business. So if you don't
maybe the billionaires will bail us out one of these days. I mean, doubt it.
We'll talk about it. So President Grover Cleveland, it knows like JP Morgan's reputation. And Cleveland's like, trying to be nice. It's like when your friend's like, oh my god, I'll pay for your dinner, it's totally fine, and they're like, no, like I insist, I need to pay. And then like then you realize you're a broke college kid and you're like, oh okay, maybe I need to stop like declining when people offer to pay for my food. but it's fine. So now we have this like conundrum where Grover Cleveland's like trying to be nice. But he also then realizes, okay, maybe I do need the money. But Morgan, like, realizes the American government is just, like, a failing business. Okay? So.
That's such a phrase to hear.
What?
In these times.
Repeat it for me.
The American government. Did you forget? I don't.
Is a failing business. The American
is a failing business.
Okay, no, I didn't forget. I was just like, wait, what are you exactly referring to? But Grover Cleveland is also like, no, a private bailout on your behalf is not what we need right now. Or it's like, not. It's like, yeah, it actually is exactly what we need right now, but like, we're not for it. But Morgan's exact quote and response to this is that if $10 million in draft is presented, you can't meet it. It will all be over before 3 o'clock.
Jeez. Say how it really is.
Yeah. Well, and then here's the other thing. Cleveland, like, knew, like, oh, okay, JP actually knows what's going on, and, like, we need money. So, JP Morgan proposes this private sale where government bonds are sold directly to Morgan. And in return, Morgan gives the United States Treasury $100 million to meet its obligations. And so then this goes through. It is salvation. The president then, this is another quote, asks if, like, hey, Morgan, is this, like, actually legal? So now we have the president of the United States asking just this, like, businessman, like, oh, hey, is what we're doing legal? And Morgan's response is, like, by virtue of a Civil War statute, it's, like, 4,000 and something. Because, like, the provision that made it legal was, like, some 1862 law about, like, private ownership when, like, America was in super crisis mode, but, like, identity crisis mode, not, like, financial crisis mode.
The South was...
So this was the impending crisis of the by Helper. Wow, I'm just killing it tonight. It's very late.
Your references are just giving me joy. I hope people that have are familiar with these references or pieces of literature and stuff.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know, Miss Megan Wounded had just emailed me, and I am filled with joy now.
Just now?
Yeah, I emailed her.
I've been
frantically emailing teachers, and I think they're getting tired of me, but it's fine.
I'm too, like, low-key scared to talk to professors, especially because everything's through Zoom, and they don't know me. I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm in that class of 30 people that you've never met, so nice to meet you. So, speaking of awkward situations where you try to maintain some dignity, President Cleveland goes back on the $100 million offer, and he's like, okay, well, if we take, like, $60 million, that's chill. And JP's like, I mean, okay. like, it's only $60 million. That's fine. That's okay. So.
He's like, I don't really care. It's whatever.
So then, of course, like, Cleveland is called out for, like, selling the government to a Wall Street person.
I mean, that's a pretty valid, like, claim, I would say, but I feel like it was also quite necessary.
Yeah.
I think it's a problem that we faced because of the things that we were doing at the time. The lack of things that we were doing, better put.
And so then Democrats at the time then turned to someone. I didn't realize I'd written this down because it's been a hot second. But they turned to William Jennings Bryant to bring up the bimetallic standard one more time. And this is where he brings up his famous metaphor of, like, we've been crucified with a cross of gold. Because their ideal solution was not a private bailout, a railroad tycoon. It was actually a bimetallic standard, which some feared would cause inflation. But then William Jennings Bryant goes on to lose 3 elections, so it does not really matter.
Oop. Sorry, yeah. Bernie. I mean...
okay, cool. So then Morgan goes on to bail out both New York City Stock Exchange and the city of New York itself in the next few decades. So yeah, so that's that story. That's the time a private transaction saved the United States from its financial burden. Now, I'm going to just read you some interesting facts about Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos that are entirely unrelated to what I've been speaking about for the past 15 minutes. So, this is stats I'm getting from a April 1st, 2020 article about on businessinsider.com. Jeff Bezos, the world's richest person, if you don't know, is also the Amazon CEO, and he made more than $5 billion in the past 3 months as of April 1st, 2020. He is richer than the British monarchy. He recently had a divorce, and his wife became the fourth richest woman in the world just because of the divorce.
Yeah, and she got, like, oh my god, I wish.
Sorry. Yeah, this article says, and it's probably outdated, it's probably more now, but it says,
was this pre-COVID?
This is April 1st, so it's, like, 12 days into my quarantine. Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure he got richer.
No, he did. So, on April 1st, because I know he's hit $200
billion. Right.
And this article says he made $120 billion as of April 1st. So, he made $80 billion in the past few months. This is outdated. So, this is outdated. This the stat on April 1st, before he made an additional $80 billion, was that he made $2,489 a second.
My goodness.
And this was before he made an additional $80 billion. So that's another thing. Just a quick little math tip for you too. If he donated 99% of like his earnings to like causes or like whatever the heck he wanted, he would still have $2 billion. So now when we have like people who are unemployed and displaced because of the coronavirus, and we have teachers who can't afford masks for students and schools that can't afford masks for students and teachers who can't afford class supplies or like food banks that are going underfunded or just other scenarios where like people just don't have access to the resources that they need because there's just some like monetary limitation in the way. It's just crazy to me that there's someone out there with $200 billion. And like, this is where my like, again, I'm taking a class on modern Germany and like, I'm not a communist. I don't think it could work because of social reasons, but like economically capitalism is just like becoming divisive in itself. Another thing I'm gonna go here, like the restrictions on like climate, like this restrictions to prevent climate change that we have that have been taken down in order to like make more like make it easier for corporations to like get away with the production of their like outputs. Their products and their outputs. That pisses me off. Like, spend the money to do it in a way that doesn't destroy our planet.
Yes, tell me how you really feel. I don't know. I think this pandemic really proved what social mobility in the United States has really come to and how large the gap really is. I mean, like you said, for me, social and economic reasons, I don't really believe communism is the answer. I'm pretty shifty on even the socialism side of things. Still doing my research.
The other thing, yeah, sorry.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I think no matter what, reform is needed, change is needed. Whether it comes through reform or, you know, abolishment, that is a conversation that needs to be explored. But at the moment, those conversations aren't happening.
Cancel.
The only conversation happening.
Cancel all men, like, 2020. That's the only conversation. We're really just doing all the hot takes. All of them.
I'm kind of glad this turned into an economy issue because that's definitely been like my most area of interest in the last couple of months. And I don't think I've gotten to express that.
How did I do with like my economy standpoint?
I thought you did pretty good. I think the relation between Jeff Bezos and J.P. Morgan was a little bit too spot on for me. Okay. I also think, I kind of picture the scenario going on, like, if we would need, like, some type of bailout from, you know, let's hypothesize that we needed a bailout from Bezos, like how that would go down with like a Trump administration type deal. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. That's a little scary for me. I think
for Trump. What?
We don't need no liberal okay. Trump. You know what I was kind of thinking about? Oh my gosh, I kind of lost my train of thought when he started saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll no, comment while you get your thoughts together. But the other thing too is that like, one thing that's always stuck out to me is like the moment I realized that like, Social Security and welfare and stuff are like socialist programs, like things that just like have always existed within my lifetime, and like why are we so afraid of socialist programs? We have them. Do we just, like, not acknowledge that? Okay. And farm subsidies, too. I'm just like, do we not acknowledge that these are socialist programs within our society? Like, why are we so against them?
I think, okay, what I was going to say, I remember now, it kind of goes hand in hand. When we talk about laissez-faire capitalism and the Gilded Age specifically, and, like, that whole, like, and capitalist, like, the free market never fails type beat. I feel like we forget that, like, doctrines, definitions, and what the free market represents in each society changes with time, technology, and culture. So, I think, for example, if you look at, like, the European Union in general, and, like, the post-G20, G7, is it G20 or G7? Hold on. My foreign policy.
Are you asking me?
After the communist bloc went down, when we started including like Saudi Arabia in decisions and stuff and realized, oh, they have oil. I think we forget that like everybody else decided, because most of the, like the European Union, you know, they have like socialized, nationalized mm-hmm. healthcare. And they have a lot more of a social safety net than the United States has.
We have
you know, I feel like we forget. Oh, I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
We have like such limited, or not limited, that's the opposite of what I'm saying. We have such fluid social mobility too. Like, I was reading an article about like increased like homelessness rates due to the pandemic, and it's just like this, like, and the thing they always say in those is that like this can, like, homelessness can affect anyone. Like, we have we have such few social safety nets for those individuals who are at risk of becoming impoverished at any given moment, and it's absolutely horrifying.
And most of it is a problem of like mm-hmm. access. Like, sometimes the social safety net is like there, but there is legislation that is literally catered to thwart the access of, you know, mm-hmm. these people. For example, I saw a thing that was basically breaking down what the process of like unemployment is, and how like you need to have an address, but like what if you're homeless and you don't have access to address or a PO box,
a phone,
or like what if you're not literate?
Yeah, what if you don't have a phone?
Or, yeah, exactly.
Like, how will they contact you?
You don't have a phone number. It comes down to like mm-hmm. pragmatism, and I know it sucks because it's such like a social mm-hmm. issue, and it sucks that like it has to come down to something so, you know, stupid and like technical, but that's truly what it is. Like, I don't know. I feel like when people talk about, oh, social safety net isn't effective, I think most of the time it's not the safety net within itself or the program within itself, but it's the fact that there's been legislation time and time again that refuses access to that. And then even at some points, like, we did a whole topic for debate on like what welfare and, you know, the UBI, like which one would like fare better. You don't realize how much like welfare has been like thwarted and like literally made to be something mm-hmm. that's not in like legislation. And specifically, I mean, like, I don't know if any Republicans are mm-hmm. watching or listening or whatever.
I don't know.
But like the GOP, like specifically in the 70s, 90s, like this was like their thing, like just making welfare.
Another thing too is like, so I've heard this in my life multiple times, people just being like, oh, like, I raised 3 kids and I didn't do it with any government help, which, like, good for you. That does mean you, like, worked hard, and you were probably, like, if you were a single mother raising 3 kids and you never had to ask the government for help, I'm saying you should be proud of that, because that there is such fragility, not of character, but of, like, the world and, like, the circumstances you were given. Like, it could have gone bad so many times, but you were strong enough to endure that. But that being said, like, there's a stigma against people who, like, do have to end up seeking the help of the government.
Yeah, for sure. And that's also another point that I was literally going to bring up is, like, a lot of people that, like, refuse to go on the social safety net, like, welfare, it's because of the stigma. It's because they don't want to be looked down mm-hmm. upon because of, mm-hmm. you know, being on welfare and needing extra help. That's part of the mm-hmm. problem. And I think, I mean, people that say that, it's so ridiculous because you're comparing to situations that aren't how do you say that word? Sorry. English, not my first language. Analogous. There we go. Situations that just clearly aren't the same, and then wanting to be like, yep, these mm-hmm. are the same. Like, for example, I mean, this might get a little saucy, but, like, if you, you know, don't face discrimination of your skin color, that might affect the way that, like, you get jobs or the way that you feel safe going into a certain place or not, you know? Or even depending on the town that you live in, like, you know, how you are perceived.
In the most provincial circumstances, an EBT card that would give your family food to survive, like, that is not something that, like, society says you should be proud of. Like, that makes you less than human in the eyes of society.
Yeah, I think... I remember I actually watched an intern
I did case. Too. I did too. I think we're talking about the same one.
Hey! Good. The same one. First of all, amazing performance. I don't think she listens, but if you listen, I love you, and I know we don't really know each other, but I think I mm-hmm. love you. Just telling you. And I think it really spoke to, like, the human aspect that policy really has. Like, you know, like, at the end of the day, these social safety nets, they aren't this abstract, like, you know, like, when we talk about UBI, it's so abstract. Sometimes it's like, oh, this will happen. Impact. Ah, you know, that's not the thing with welfare, okay? If welfare goes away, it's millions of people that will lose, like, tangible things. And I feel like that's so hard for people mm-hmm. to, like, connect to. But I feel like that piece really put it in a perspective for me. It was like, yeah, 1 + 1 = 2.
Exactly.
You know, that type of thing. Oh. When I talk too much, I cough. So
maybe
I'm
that
so
means
sorry.
We should like. Maybe that means we should wrap it up. At least for this aspect of the episode, this has been a crazy tangent. I think a great thing we're still discussed. There were a lot of hot takes in there, though. I feel like
this was there were a lot of hot takes in there. It's kind
like
of fun,
the other thing too, we can talk about this forever. We can. This is again something we're never going to stop learning about. Like what has worked, what hasn't worked, what history tells us, things like that.
Yeah.
The 27 yes. minutes and 50 seconds we've been talking about this issue about the way American economic system is set up, like the way we've been talking about it, is something that like is again debated by theory and things like that. So this conversation is actually never completed, but we do have to hit a stopping point here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about something that's near and dear to Catherine and I. And I'll probably be eating cake because I think I need to eat cake right now. Marie Antoinette, anyone?
Yeah.
But with that, thank you for listening to part one.
Wow,
if you have to take thank you. If you have to take a break, we totally understand. Just come back, relax, and enjoy the episode of his story time.
So we have come to a conclusion, Pod.
There is nothing I hate more in this world than lying, but we definitely did just lie.
We did indeed.
This episode will actually be two parts because we realize that this is a big topic. We need to let it breathe and marinate and live and have its own life.
Yes.
So if you do want to hear Catherine and I pop off about the last great dynasty of Russia and the last segmented... influence of Caesar with a figurehead position in the world, which is so poetic, metaphoric. Everything about that is kind of amazing because the Tsar is like a way of saying Caesar in Russian descent.
Yes, sir.
But yes. So yeah, this is actually a two-part episode. Catherine, do you have anything to say to tie them over until next time?
All I'm going to say is, I mean, I just love the fact that Blake Tynan made this, like, an expose on, like, the economic state of the United States, and, you know, I hope to do that as well. So, you mm-hmm. know, I hope this, like, hot take-filled episode is good enough for y'all, and yeah. Stay tuned for part two. Also, this is shamelessly not even like, yeah, we need to let it breathe, and this is for creative quality control, but it's also for the fact that we are both busy and we need to make two episodes. So
we need to give it time. But thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of His Story Time. We hope you learned a bit and you grew a bit. Maybe even if you disagreed with something we said, that's totally fine. Okay, I promise Catherine and I are the type of people that like will hear you out on things as long as you don't use some ethical argument that's very obscure and demeans an entire like demographic of people. So as long as you don't do that.
Or yell at me. If you yell at me, I just won't listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just cracked my knuckles. So that was ASMR for you. Have a great rest of your day, night, evening, weekend, what have you. And thank you so much for tuning into this episode of His Story Time.
Bye, Pod.